seems that Jesus is always curing lepers. And again, as I've said before, leprosy is, obviously it's something that seems to be pretty much eradicated in this day and age. But in the time of Jesus, it was something that was fairly common, all too common. We don't really know exactly what that was. It was probably under an umbrella that they called leprosy. It was probably all kinds of skin disorders and those sorts of things. At any rate, whatever it was something that was embarrassing at the very least, and it was debilitating or even deadly at the worst. It's something that kept people away from the community. It kept them away from their being able to worship God. It separated them from all kinds of things that were really pretty vital to them. So whatever this was that these people suffered from, it was not a good thing. We hear two stories of the healing of lepers. One is from the second book of Kings. The prophet Elisha heals this Syrian named Naaman. And then in the gospel today from Luke, we hear of the healing of these 10 lepers, one of whom is a Samaritan. Again, kind of an outcast to most of the Jewish people, kind of a somebody they would rather forget. Leprosy, I think, in the scriptures, all things in the scriptures, though they actually happen, they're also there's a deeper spiritual significance to all of those things, and these illnesses are no different. These men might have been suffering from some sort of physical infirmity, but it's symbolic of all of our deeper infirmities, particularly spiritual ones. Just as a leper was unable to really properly relate to the rest of their society, very often they were outcast, they were in leper colonies, they were forced out by themselves outside of the city walls where there was no protection from enemies, there was no access to food and water, there was no access to community life besides amongst themselves. So they were all just a group of the walking wounded, so to speak. And they were not allowed into the temple to worship, which is that much more of an agony for them. So, just in the same way, all of us, I think, have some sort of spiritual afflictions that keep us from one another and keep us from God. And they may be different in each of us. There are some things that I think we all kind of share in common. We do have an underlying fear of the Lord. We have an underlying fear of His will for us. We have an underlying fear of what's in my future. All of these things are, wounds or things in us that are diseased and need to be healed. We need that deeper certitude that God is indeed loving and is indeed with us. I want to go into the story from 2 Kings, our first reading. This Naaman character. He is a general in the Aramean army, very successful, brilliant strategist, valiant warrior. He is highly thought of because of his valor and because of his wisdom and his cunning, and he's a good man. As a foreigner, he's not a Jewish, he's not amongst the Jewish people, the chosen people. But he is, naturally speaking, a good man, and he's highly thought of, and he's powerful. Again, we could probably assume he's probably like the second or third most powerful person in the kingdom of Aram at that point, which is a neighboring kingdom to Israel. And yet, as powerful as he is, as intelligent as he is, as well-placed as he is, he can't fix himself. He's a leper. He's a leper. And this is an embarrassment to him and a real trial for him. Now, here's this powerful figure. And this is, I'm introducing this from before this. This is the end part of the story. I'm going into the story a little further. He's probably gone to many physicians in his own country. He's probably done everything that he can to try to fix this problem, and obviously nothing has worked. He is still very much a leper. But then something unexpected happens. There is a girl that his wife has as a slave. And she's a Jewish girl, and she was captured in a previous battle and taken into servitude. It is impossible to imagine somebody lower on the social totem pole than this particular girl. Because first of all, she was a child. Children were property in this time, and that's about it. They were property. They had zero rights, none. Not only that, but she's a girl. Again, and you know, whatever, you know, it's just history. Women were just on a lower social rung than men were. So she's got that going for her, or actually against her. And not only that, but then she's a servant, she's a slave. She is a captured prisoner of war, forced into servitude. They don't get any lower, they don't get any more humble, they don't get any less important than this girl. This is the person who comes to Naaman and says, I know how to heal you. I know what you need to do. The least likely person in the whole picture is the one who gives him the direction to go. She says, you should go to my land and you should see one of our prophets, and they will tell you how, by the power of God, this is going to happen, how you're going to be healed. Now, this is, as good of a man as he is, this is Naaman's shining moment, I think. Because he listens. He listens to her. He doesn't have to. I mean, here's this powerful man. He's this wise man, brilliant, successful. And he listens to this slave girl. And it's not just, you know, oh, okay, I'll do this. I'll go put this, you know, I'll take this medicine or whatever. Like, he has to saddle up with his whole retinue, as it says. He saddles up with probably his honor guard and all kinds of attendants, and who knows how many people are coming with him. And he goes to a different country, travels to a different country. And he takes all this wealth with him, try to give as a gift in order to get healing. This is not an easy thing that he's doing. It's not something he just kind of does spur of the moment. It's not a flippant thing. He is very serious about this, and it's a very serious undertaking. So here this humble little girl says, you should go do this, and he does it. A lesson for all of us. He's humble. He's humble, and he listens to wisdom even if it's unlikely. So then he gets to Israel, and he sees the king there, and he says, I'm here to look for healing. I was told that I could come here for healing. And the king tears his garments, and he says, this guy's trying to have a beef with me. He's trying to, I don't know, he's trying to pin me against the wall somehow. This is some sort of deception. And he says, I'm no god, I can't heal you. And he rends his garments as a protest. But then the prophet Elisha hears about this, and he says, send him to me, and you'll see that there's a prophet in Israel. So he comes there. Again, Naaman loads up, travels up into the Samaria, and he says, you know, please heal me. What should I do? Now here's where it kind of gets a little funny for Naaman. He's expecting some certain thing to happen. He's expecting, he even says this, I expected that he would come out and he would, you know, wave his hands over me, or that he would, you know, work some kind of magic spell, or, you know, invoke the name of the Lord, or do something like this, do something kind of dramatic. And instead, he comes out to the outside of his house, the prophet, and he says, go over to the Jordan River and wash 7 times. It's like, that's too easy. Naaman's, he's mad. He goes away mad. He's like, this is ridiculous. He's not going to do it. He's just going to go home angry. And his attendants say, hey, you know, you were ready to do anything that was more complicated or more dramatic than this. Why not just try it? And so he does. He goes and washes in the River Jordan. And, you know, and I can understand what his protest is. You know, I've been to the Jordan River. You know, we probably have this idea in our minds of this beautiful scenic river. No, I mean, it's like Little Pigeon Creek. It's little and it's muddy and it's ugly and it's just straight and it's just, yeah, there's nothing special about the Jordan River, promise. Except that it just happens to be where God told him to go. That's the special thing about it. And he says, oh, there are better rivers, cleaner rivers, bigger rivers in my place. I could have just gone there. So he's expecting a certain solution. And this is an unexpected solution. And so he doesn't trust it. Second lesson for us. We have our expectations in life, how things are going to go and what's going to happen and how we think it should go and how we think things should be solved. And oftentimes we want to solve things ourselves. Folks, it doesn't work that way. Most often they get solved in the most unexpected ways. Many times our answer is wait. The solution to our problem is give it some time. I don't know about you, but I hate that answer. Hate it. But it's often not what we expect. Maybe it's simpler than we expect. Or maybe it's less attractive than we expect. But we got to trust him. And Naaman does this. He goes and he washes and he has healing. It says his skin becomes like that of an infant. And so he comes back to the prophet. He says, I want to pay you. I want to pay you for what you've done for me. And he says, no, I'm not going to take your money. And it's the Lord who's done this in you. So again, he's learning. He's learning through all this. He's saying, oh gosh, I got healed. I need to pay this guy back. He's the source of my healing. No, God is the source of your healing. And Elisha is telling him this. You know, you're getting hung up on the earthly thing again. God's the source of your healing. And so then finally, Naaman really gets it right. He says, give me 2 mule loads of earth. And you're like, why? Every land in that area had their own deity that they worshipped very often. And he came to realize, as a foreigner, that the God of Israel was the only real God. And so he said, I want to worship your God on your soil. So he took his big piles of dirt back so that he could spread it out, build an altar, and offer sacrifice to the real God. What's the point? God's the source of our healing. God's the goal. He's the goal. He's the point of everything. And so worshiping him properly is the goal. Folks, that's what we're going to be doing in heaven. If you're bored at worship, you're going to be pretty bored in heaven because that's what they do there. They worship in awe of God. And that's what he came to conclusion of. You know, Naaman, he died. After he was healed of his leprosy, he got old, he died. Lazarus, after he was raised from the dead by Jesus, he died. This leper that came back and thanked Jesus for being healed, he died. So, was the healing pointless? No. No. Because each of these people came back and worshiped the true God. We're all entrusted with infirmities, folks. I don't say we're punished with them. We're entrusted with our infirmities, whatever they are, physical, mental, spiritual. They're given to us by God, and we may not understand them. We may not like them. We probably don't like them, but they're ours. They're ours. Why does he do it? Why does he do it? Why do we have the infirmities that we do? Why do we have the doubts? Why do we have the struggles and the problems and the conflicts and the sins? I don't know. I think God just wants us to know that we need him, so that we want him, so that we can have him. Our lesson today, humility is always the beginning of our healing. Humility is always the beginning of our healing. It's only God who gives the healing. He does it in some pretty surprising ways. very unexpected ways. Usually we don't see it coming. And then finally, what's the point of all of it? That we can have him.